Chapter 12. A contribution of its own. Many parts, even of the main streets, with their projecting stories tottering overhead, and nearly shutting out the sky, were more like huge chimneys than open ways. At the corners of some of these, great bonfires were burning to prevent infection from the plague, of which it was rumored that some citizens had lately died, and few, who availing themselves of the light thus afforded paused for a moment to look around them, would have been disposed to doubt the existence of the disease, or wonder at its dreadful visitations. But it was not in such scenes as these, or even in the deep and miry road, that Will Marks found the chief obstacles to his progress. There were kites and ravens feeding in the streets, the only scavengers the city kept, who, scenting what he carried, followed the carter fluttered on its top, and croaked their knowledge of its burden, and their ravenous appetite for prey. There were distant fires, where the poor wood and plaster tenements wasted fiercely, and whither crowds made their way, clamoring eagerly for plunder, beating down all who came within their reach, and yelling like devils let loose. There were single-handed men flying from bands of ruffians, who pursued them with naked weapons, and hunted them savagely. There were drunken, desperate robbers issuing from their dens and staggering through the open streets, where no man dared molest them. There were vagabond servitors returning from the bear garden, where had been good sport that day, dragging after them their torn and bleeding dogs, or leaving them to die, and rot upon the road. Nothing was abroad but cruelty, violence, and disorder. Many were the interruptions which Will Marks encountered from these stragglers, and many the narrow escapes he made. Now some stout bully would take his seat upon the cart, insisting to be driven to his own home, and now two or three men would come down upon him together, and demand that on peril of his life he showed them what he had inside. Then a party of the city watch, upon their rounds, would draw across the road, and not satisfied with his tale, question him closely, and revenge themselves by a little cuffing and hustling for maltreatment sustained at other hands that night. All these assailants had to be rebutted, some by fair words, some by foul, and some by blows. But Will Marks was not the man to be stopped or turned back. Now he had penetrated so far, and though he got on slowly, still he made his way down Fleet Street, and reached the church at last. As he had been forewarned, all was in readiness. Directly he stopped, the coffin was removed by four men, who appeared so suddenly that they seemed to have started from the earth. A fifth mounted the cart, and scarcely allowing Will time to snatch from it a little bundle containing such of his own clothes as he had thrown off on assuming his disguise, drove briskly away. Will never saw Carter Man again. He followed the body into the church, and it was well he lost no time in doing so, for the door was immediately closed. There was no light in the building save that which came from a couple of torches borne by two men in cloaks, who stood upon the brink of a vault. Each supported a female figure, and all observed a profound silence. By this dim and solemn glare, which made Will feel as though light itself were dead, and its tomb the dreary arches that frowned above, they placed the coffin in the vault, with uncovered heads, and closed it up. One of the torchbearers then turned to Will, and stretched forth his hand, in which was a purse of gold. Something told him directly that those were the same eyes which he had seen beneath the mask. "Take it," said the cavalier in a low voice, "and be happy. Though these have been hasty obsequies, and no priest has blessed the work, there will not be the less peace with thee thereafter, for having laid his bones beside those of his little children. Keep thy own counsel, for thy sake no less than ours, and God be with thee." The blessing of a widowed mother on thy head, good friend. Cried the younger lady through her tears, the blessing of one who has now no hope or rest, but in this grave. Will stood with the purse in his hand, and involuntarily made a gesture, as though he would return it, for though a thoughtless fellow, he was of a frank and generous nature. But the two gentlemen, extinguishing their torches, cautioned them to be gone, as their common safety would be endangered by a longer delay, and at the same time their retreating footsteps sounded through the church. He turned, therefore, towards the point at which he had entered, and seeing by a faint gleam in the distance that the door was again partially open, groped his way towards it, and so passed into the street. Meantime the local authorities of Kingston had kept watch and ward all the previous night, fancying every now and then that dismal shrieks were borne towards them on the wind, and frequently winking to each other, and drawing closer to the fire as they drank the health of the lonely sentinel, upon whom a clerical gentleman present was especially severe by reason of his levity and youthful folly. Two or three of the gravest in company, who were of a theological turn, propounded to him the question, whether such a character was not, but poorly armed for single combat with the devil, and whether he himself would not have been a stronger opponent. But the clerical gentleman, sharply reproving them for their presumption in discussing such questions, clearly showed that a fitter champion than Will could scarcely have been selected. Not only for that, being a child of Satan, he was the less likely to be alarmed by the appearance of his own father, but because Satan himself would be at his ease in such company, and would not scruple to kick up his heels to an extent which it was quite certain he would never venture before clerical eyes, under whose influence, as was notorious, he became quite a tame and milk and water character. But when next morning arrived, and with it no Will marks, and when a strong party repairing to the spot, as a strong party ventured to do in broad day, found Will gone and the gibbet empty, matters grew serious indeed. The day passing away, and no news arriving, and the night going on also without any intelligence, the thing grew more tremendous still. In short, the neighborhood worked itself up to such a comfortable pitch of mystery and horror, that it is a great question whether the general feeling was not one of excessive disappointment, when, on the second morning, Will Marks returned. However this may be, back Will came in a very cool and collected state, and appearing not to trouble himself much about anybody except old John Podgers, who, having been sent for, was sitting in the town hall crying slowly, and dozing between whiles. Having embraced his uncle, and assured him of his safety, Will mounted on a table, and told his story to the crowd. And surely they would have been the most unreasonable crowd that ever assembled together, if they had been in the least respect disappointed with the tale he told them. For besides describing the witch's dance to the minute's motion of their legs, and performing it in character on the table, with the assistance of a broomstick, he related how they had carried off the body in a copper cauldron, and so bewitched him, that he lost his senses until he found himself lying under a hedge at least 10 miles off, whence he had straightway returned as they then beheld. The story gained such universal applause, that it soon afterwards brought down express from London the great witch finder of the age, the heaven-born Hopkins, who, having examined Will closely on several points, pronounced it the most extraordinary and the best accredited witch story ever known, under which title it was published at the Three Bibles on London Bridge, in small quarto, with a view of the cauldron from an original drawing, and a portrait of the clerical gentleman as he sat by the fire. On one point Will was particularly careful, and that was to describe for the witches he had seen, three impossible old females, whose likenesses never were or will be. Thus he saved the lives of the suspected parties, and of all other old women who were dragged before him to be identified. This circumstance occasioned John Podgers much grief and sorrow, until happening one day, to cast his eyes upon his housekeeper, and observing her to be plainly afflicted with rheumatism, he procured her to be burned as an undoubted witch. For this service to the state he was immediately knighted, and became from that time Sir John Podgers. Will Marks never gained any clue to the mystery in which he had been an actor, nor did any inscription in the church, which he often visited afterwards, nor any of the limited inquiries that he dared to make, yield him the least assistance. As he kept his own secret, he was compelled to spend the gold discreetly and sparingly. In the course of time he married the young lady, of whom I have already told you, whose maiden name is not recorded, with whom he led a prosperous and happy life. Years and years after this adventure, it was his wont to tell her upon a stormy night that it was a great comfort to him to think those bones, to whomsoever they might have once belonged, were not bleaching in the troubled air, but were moldering away with the dust of their own kith and kindred in a quiet grave. Further particulars of Master Humphrey's visitor, being very full of Mr. Pickwick's application, and highly pleased with the compliment he had paid me, it will be readily supposed that long before our next night of meeting I communicated it to my three friends, who unanimously voted his admission into our body. We all looked forward with some impatience to the occasion which would enroll him among us, but I am greatly mistaken if Jack Redburn and myself were not by many degrees the most impatient of the party. At length the night came, and a few minutes after 10 Mr. Pickwick's knock was heard at the street door. He was shown into a lower room, and I directly took my crooked stick, and went to accompany him upstairs, in order that he might be presented with all honor and formality. Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick, apostrophe said I, on entering the room, I am rejoiced to see you, rejoiced to believe, that this is but the opening of a long series of visits to this house, and but the beginning of a close and lasting friendship. Apostrophe, that gentleman made a suitable reply with a cordiality and frankness peculiarly his own, and glanced with a smile towards two persons behind the door, whom I had not at first observed, and whom I immediately recognized as Mr. Samuel Weller and his father. It was a warm evening, but the elder Mr. Weller was attired, notwithstanding, in a most capacious greatcoat, and his chin enveloped in a large speckled shawl, such as is usually worn by stage coachmen on active service. He looked very rosy and very stout, especially about the legs, which appeared to have been compressed into his top boots with some difficulty. His broad-brimmed hat he held under his left arm, and with the forefinger of his right hand he touched his forehead a great many times in acknowledgement of my presence. I am very glad to see you in such good health, Mr. Weller, apostrophe said I. Why, thank ye, sir, apostrophe returned Mr. Weller, the axle ain't broke yet. We keeps up a steady pace, not too sewer, but with a moderate degree o' friction, and the consequence is that we're still a-runnin', and comes into the time reglar. My son Samuel, sir, as you may have read on in history, apostrophe added Mr. Weller, introducing his firstborn. I received Sam very graciously, but before he could say a word his father struck in again. Samuel Weller, sir, apostrophe said the old gentleman, has conferred upon me the ancient title O grandfather which had long laid dormouse, and was supposed to be nearly extinct in our family. Sammy, relate a anecdote of one o' them boys, that ere little anecdote about young Tony saying as he would smoke a pipe and beckoning to his mother. Apostrophe, be quiet, can't you? Apostrophe said Sam. I never see such a old magpie, never. Apostrophe, that ere Tony is the blessedest boy, apostrophe said Mr. Weller, heedless of this rebuff, the blessedest boy as ever I see in my days. Of all the charminest infants as ever I heard tell on, including them as was kivered over by the robin redbreasts arter they'd committed suicide with blackberries, there never was any like that ere little Tony. He's always a-playin' with a quart pot, that boy is. To see him a-settin' down on the doorstep pretending to drink out of it, and fetching a long breath arterwards, and smoking a bit of firewood, and saying, now I'm grandfather, to see him a-doin' that a two-year-old is better than any play as was ever wrote. Now I'm grandfather. He wouldn't take a pint pot, if he was to make him a present on it, but he gets his quart, and then he says, now I'm grandfather. Apostrophe, Mr. Weller was so overpowered by this picture that he straightway fell into a most alarming fit of coughing, which must certainly have been attended with some fatal result, but for the dexterity and promptitude of Sam, who, taking a firm grasp of the shawl just under his father's chin, shook him to and fro with great violence, at the same time administering some smart blows between his shoulders. By this curious mode of treatment, Mr. Weller was finally recovered, but with a very crimson face, and in a state of great exhaustion. "He'll do now, Sam," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, who had been in some alarm himself. "He'll do, sir," apostrophe apostrophe cried Sam, looking reproachfully at his parent. "Yes, he will do one o' these days. He'll do for hisself, and then he'll wish he hadn't. Did anybody ever see sich a inconsiderate old file, laughing in two convulsions afore company, and stamping on the floor, as if he'd brought his own carpet with him, and was under a wager, to punch the pattern out in a given time? He'll begin again in a minute. There he's a going off, I said he would." Apostrophe apostrophe, in fact, Mr. Weller, whose mind was still running upon his precocious grandson, was seen to shake his head from side to side, while a laugh, working like an earthquake, below the surface, produced various extraordinary appearances in his face, chest, and shoulders, the more alarming, because unaccompanied by any noise whatever. These emotions, however, gradually subsided, and after three or four short relapses he wiped his eyes with the cuff of his coat, and looked about him with tolerable composure. "Afore the governor withdraws," apostrophe said Mr. Weller, "there is a pint, respecting which Sammy has a question to ask. While that question is a purweight in this here conversation, perhaps the gentleman will permit me to retire." Apostrophe, what are you going away for? Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Sam, seizing his father by the coattail. "I never see such a undutiful boy as you, Samivel," apostrophe returned Mr. Weller. "Didn't you make a solemn promise, amounting almost to a speech's oh wow, that you'd put that ere question on my account?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Well, I'm agreeable to do it," apostrophe said Sam, "but not if you go cutting away like that," as the bull turned round and mildly observed to the drover when they was a-goading him into the butcher's door. "The fact is, sir," apostrophe said Sam, addressing me, "that he wants to know something respecting that ere lady as is housekeeper here." Apostrophe, "A. What is that?" Apostrophe, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.